Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish. Powers of life fill me and enfold me. Suffuse me and empower me, awaken me, the fire of passion, courage, and creativity, which burns within. As the fire in the night banishes the dark, so may the fire in my belly banish all that holds me back or frightens me, that I may live in the light and seize the joy of every moment. There is one power in the universe, and I am a perfect manifestation of that power, proud, beautiful, and unafraid. No power may hold me back or cage me, for the power of the Spirit is in me. I rejoice in my life and in every action. I love and am loved in return. I reflect the light of deity in my life with boundless passion and creativity, with which I honor myself in the divine, for that which is above is like unto that which is below. Yea, both are equal, for neither is complete without the other. But together, all things are possible. Welcome to Pagan Priestess, and thank you for joining us.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world. This is Tracy Logan Wood coming to you live from the Pagans Tonight Radio Network, and this is this week's rendition of Pagan Priestess. Tonight joining me is Lady Stephanie Neal from Georgia and Lady Lisa Spiral from Minnesota. Welcome, ladies.
Hello there.
Hi,
how are you?
I am well. So how are you ladies doing?
I'm doing wonderfully.
Yes. I need two more weeks before October is over.
October is over.
I still need two more weeks.
But it is the 1st of November, which means it is All Saints Day. And tomorrow is All Souls Day. For those of you who celebrate those, my husband and I will be continuing to celebrate as we journey to the cemetery tomorrow to go visit our parents.
Oh, how nice.
So that's what we're doing tomorrow. So I'm going to go visit my pop. And bring him a birthday cupcake because I didn't go to the cemetery for his actual birthday, which was the 29th. Mm. So he'll get a birthday cupcake and a candle.
Yeah.
Hopefully you will be celebrating in your own way. So, ladies, what have you been up to since last time you were on the show?
Lisa, would you like to go first?
I could. I have been... I've been writing a couple of things for the Minnesota Women's Press magazine. I was at the Mankato Women in Spirituality Conference and presented a couple
Yay.
Workshops there. I went to the Earth Conclave, and this fall's conclave was about astrology, so that was really fascinating and lovely. I've got my second book is... in formatting, and hopefully will be out
Yay.
Early in 2014. And so I believe is the compilation that I'm included in, Rooted in the Body, Seeking the Soul, about magic practitioners with disabilities. So busy.
Yeah, sounds like it.
This is why I need another 2 weeks.
Yes. It really sounds like
you I'm sure that might have more to do with Mercury. Yeah, I think that might have more to do with Mercury retrograde than with the Halloween season, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Stephanie? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been putting on the finishing touches of the manual that I'm working on related to developing groups for the tradition. So it's about ready to be sent out possibly within the next couple of days to Lord Don so that he can see if it's okay. So that's been very exciting, putting that all together, and that's going to be used as an intensive for the third degree intensives, which I've been working with Reverend Lily Green for the last year, and our goal was to have 10 intensives done within 1 year. So the end of the year is really coming up on us really quickly, but I think we'll be able to hit our goal of 10. So it's looking pretty good. And this last weekend we had our witches ball at our temple, and of course the salad ritual, and everyone just, because they're just a really lively, happy bunch, everybody just had a ball. How about you, Tracy?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a little high-strung today and a little chirpy because I was shopping, like, right before the show.
Okay.
So I'm gleefully happy that I finally found a typewriter.
Oh, you've been looking for that for a long time.
I did. I've been looking for a typewriter. And, you know, it's kind of like a hit or miss thing in a thrift store because there aren't a lot of places that actually sell typewriters anymore. So I scored a Smith Corona for like $15.
Excellent.
It's electric. It plugs in. It works. I'll probably need a new ribbon, although it is working. So, you know, I'm kind of like nerd excited about scoring a typewriter.
Why, sure. Very good.
So, you know, and I've been working on various art projects and things like that. And
Like what?
Special things. I'm making stuff for all the priestesses.
Ooh.
But I can't tell you, or I have to kill you.
Okay. I'll just come back, so go ahead and tell.
but I jumped ahead of everybody in the end of the show because, you know, we always ask where everybody can get a hold of you. So I posted my Pinterest for those of you who want to follow me on Pinterest because I'm very artsy, craftsy, and I'm kind of a Pinterest fanatic. So that's what I have been doing.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So otherwise, you know, I've just been kind of keeping an eye on our Common Book of Wicca project.
Oh, can you say something about that?
For those of you who have absolutely no idea what that is, we're doing a project to write a common book of Wicca and witchcraft that will be in the public domain so everybody can use it, which basically means, like, we will own the copyrights, but we will give public domain permission for everybody to use it. Because there's a lot of copyright violations going on in the world. And a lot of the publishers really do hold the rights to everybody's books. So for those of you who are fans of Scott Cunningham, the publisher owns his stuff, and they're going to own it for a really long time because they're still publishing his stuff. And as far as I know it, his family isn't making anything off of it, but the publisher is.
Mm.
But, you know, in X amount of years, when you expect it to be public domain so that anybody and everybody can use stuff, it probably won't be.
And that's what you're trying to not have happen with the comic book of Wicca that everybody.
Right. So this book potentially is going to be able to be used by everybody without copyright restrictions. So there are a lot of people who are jumping on board to help out with the project. Oberon Zell, Raven Digitalis, Phaedra Bonowitz, Abby Willowrit. If you don't know who she is, you can look up the Goddess 2000 project. So hopefully other people will be jumping on board for that. But here is a link if you want to go check it out and watch the little video and donate money, because that would be really helpful. We just reached a significant marker with it. We just went over $5,000.
Oh, nice.
But there are only 10 days left. So we're hoping to raise as much money before 10 days is up as possible. So there you go. Check it out if you have a minute. If you got a book, please donate. And that's, I guess, about all I can say.
Well, I think it's...
And now, back to the show.
Oh, right, right. But one last thing. I really do think it's a valuable, very good idea for the entire pagan community. And it might not necessarily be obvious now, but will absolutely mm-hmm. become more and more obvious as the future arrives. So it's good.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting because there have been mixed reaction to it. Some people understand the concept of, you know, the whole public domain thing, so they're really excited about it.
Right.
By way of, like, cool, you know, it's going to be stuff that everybody can use in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people are worried that it will be looked at as some kind of Bible and be, like, the last word on Wicca. And it's you know, that's what everybody says when certain books come out.
Right.
That, you know, I think in our community we have enough room to say, if it take what you like and move on.
Yeah.
You know, there is no, Wicca was never meant to be a one-size-fits-all kind of religion.
Yes.
I think it's been an interesting reaction, but a lot of the leadership are very excited and ready to help out with the project. So that's a good thing.
Yes.
But anyway, on with the show. So I announced in the Pagan Priestess chat room that they could ask us questions, but nobody asked any questions. So we will just go right on to our topic without a Q&A session, I guess. But we're talking about connecting to the divine. This is part two. For those of you who have been tuning in. So this is part two of connecting to the divine. And so essentially we're talking about other ways to connect to the divine and using the ancestors as a bridge. So basically we're going to cover who are ancestors, ways to work with the ancestors, daily practice, shrines, and what the ancestors are good for or maybe not so good for. That's a lot. So, yeah, it's a lot. So we may actually go a little bit over the hour.
Okay.
We'll stick around as long as we can talk about it and our phones don't all die at the same time. So, ladies, what would you like to say on the topic of connecting to the divine with the ancestors as a bridge?
To ancestors as divine entities, as bridges to the divine, I guess from my sensibilities, and of course this is just only my opinion, and that's why we celebrate as pagans and honor many opinions. So this is just a single opinion, and that is, because the way I approach the divine or a deity, that
it's just the notion of having the bridge doesn't necessarily agree with my own sensibilities, or maybe it's just the word bridge. But to me, that it's as if like I have to be here to cross over something to get there, to get to deity, and that the ancestors are the thing that I cross over to get there, where I don't think, or at least I don't need a here or there, that the divine, that there's nothing separating me. And to me, it's an impossibility for anything to separate me from deity. In fact, I believe that that I live inside of deity, and that everything emanates from the center, and you know, the very center. And so the relationship with space or time, that there's, I'm already there, like everybody else. I believe that everybody is already inside the very heart of deity. Now, with the ancestors, I believe that, well, I know that they're my companions, and they come with me, and I go with them, and that's a whole other exploration, but I don't need them, and they don't need me. We just choose to have this partnership, just to be with each other as we explore this big, wonderful reality system.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I will give you that. I believe that you, Stephanie, are a little bit of a unique human in the way you view the divine, and that it's not a stretch for you connection-wise.
Okay.
So, not true for all of us, and certainly not true for everybody in the audience. Just saying.
And that's exciting. And so I am very interested to hear everyone's approach, because that's what makes everything so wonderful, because everybody's approach is divinity in their own way.
Gotcha.
Well, having said all that, I agree with both of you. I struggle with the word bridge too, because it implies an intermediary that is not necessary, but
right.
I find that it can be useful.
Right.
I also, when I wrote my first book, Manifest Divinity, I included the ancestors as an expression of the divine. Because they are not on the same plane that we are.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was using a very, very, very broad definition of divinity, I wasn't talking about deity specifically. But I also think that there are things that the ancestors are useful for, especially when you've got people who struggle with making a connection with the divine, or whose sense of the divine is not deity-based. You know, Stephanie, you talk about that we sit at the heart of the divine, and when you talk about the divine in that way, it isn't in a deity form. It's bigger than that. It doesn't lend itself to those kind of definitions and that human connection in that way. It just is, and it surrounds us, and it's big, and we know that it's there, and it's awesome. But it's hard to talk to about you know, day to day kinds of things. And the ancestors are really easy to talk to about day-to-day kinds of things. And so in that sense, I think that they can be sort of a fill-in-the-gap. For those kinds of relationships with other planes. Does that make sense? Am I making any sense?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I just want to state that I didn't want anybody to get, like, hung up on the way I phrased that, because, of course, I had to write it out, and I just threw in there as bridges to the divine. But the point of some of these shows and doing them in a series is to kind of talk about the different ways that people can connect to the divine, because we all have our own ways of doing things.
But the other piece with the ancestors that I talk about, you know, one of the things that I say is invocation of the divine promotes invocation of the divine. So the more present the ancestors are in our lives, inherently the more present other aspects of the divine will be as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I can generically say across the board that, you know, as pagans, we have so many different practices and so many different ways that we do connect. Ancestors, even if we're adopted or we don't know that much about our families, are something that we all have in common. Because
that's
you came from somewhere.
Who are the ancestors, isn't it?
Well, we are the future ancestors for sure. But
there are
until
a lot of people
they
who talk ancestors and descendants in a sort of a cyclic connection, and so when you invoke the ancestors, you also invoke the descendants.
Mm-hmm. There was several years ago. I was at a festival, and I love invoking the ancestors. So I can be at a festival anywhere and someone can say, hey, you know, can you invoke the ancestors? And I can go, yes, I can, and I don't really need any prep for stuff like that. But for this one ritual, I was asked to invoke the descendants, and that one kind of like, huh, hold on, I can think about that one for a minute.
Mm-hmm. We're getting lots of...
But, you know, I was, after I did it, I was very excited about the idea that I guess hadn't really permeated my consciousness so much before.
We're getting lots of questions about family and ancestors as family. And I'd like to put in a definition that I got from my dear friend Donald Engstrom about ancestors. He says, we have ancestors of the blood, which are your family relations, your genetic ancestors. We also have ancestors of the heart, you know, our
mm-hmm.
friends and the people that we have adopted as family in our lives who count as ancestors to us and who work in our lives as ancestors when they pass. And we also have ancestors of the spirit, and those are like the heroes. And the historical figures that you admire and want to emulate. So I don't think that ancestors need to be restricted to ancestors of family.
Mm-hmm. Well, my two cents worth on that is it depends on what you practice.
That's true.
Because, you know, my husband and I, we practice African diaspora. And that kind of became a little bit of an issue because we did have people who had passed who were like family to us, not related to us by blood, that we had on the shrine. And it was like, well, okay, they're already there. I'm not going to take them off because they're already there. I can just be a little bit more choosy about who I add in the future was kind of my two cents worth.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely depends on what you practice, but I think generally most pagans, I don't know of any particular group that has such restrictions as far as, you know, blood-only family.
Yes.
Ooh, cricket, cricket, a lull in the conversation, ladies.
Stephanie, you want to chime in on who the ancestors are?
Oh, okay. I look at ancestors pretty much, and I love the way you
broke them down like that, that's a good way to look at it. And I, too, like Tracy and you, love to work with the ancestors, well, because they're family, and basically it's a love story of the past and the future and the present and all intersecting with each other, and we all meet together every single minute of every single day, so it's not necessarily there's a set time or place, it's just we all emanate from that same point and end up at that same point. And there's just that gentle conversation that moves through the day and moves through the night and shows up, and they'll show up in many forms, you know, through animals and the elements and humans and statues and that breeze that blows across your face or that leaf that happens to blow across your feet. So the form I'm not necessarily tied to, because I just accept it all, because it is such a quiet, peaceable way to enter the day and enter the night. And yes, there are specific times when I'm doing specific works, then I will invoke. And even in the invoking, even when I do ritual, I feel a little awkward invoking, because I'm thinking to myself, you're already here, you've been with me all day, you live with me, and here I am invoking you. Awkward. So that kind of thing always, but because I love the formality and because I love ritual, I'll go ahead and do that. But then I try to explain at the end of each ritual that I said, I'm not going to thank them and devoke them. Please remain with us. Please enjoy the rest of the evening with us. Please continue to communicate with us. So I'm all about that. We're all in this together, and we're all experiencing. I am an ancestor at this very moment, as you both have already brought up. I am an acting as ancestor to many of future lives, and so it's fluid as always, never stagnant, and everyone is doing and learning and loving and experimenting and experiencing life on many reality systems, and this is and that I don't necessarily it's like describing the ocean and what part of the ocean am I in. It's not, mm-hmm. I just can't put it all in a nice, not that we're trying to, but I just can't put it in a nice, neat little box.
Time is a very fluid thing, and especially once you leave this plane. I don't experience time as necessarily as strictly linear as the people with the atomic clock would like to think that it is.
Right, right.
But I am sure that the people that I talk to who have passed over do not experience time that way at all.
Right.
Uh-huh. Agreed.
I do think that they have phases that they go through when they're more present or less present, when they've got work to do where they are or work to do about what's here on this planet. I think there's a lot of that. But if you're looking to contact a specific ancestor, I think that if you are concerned about inconveniencing them, putting it through that time filter of whenever it's convenient for you, could you show up here now, is entirely appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good.
Agreed. I want to go back for a moment, only because it occurred to me to state something else about who should be on your shrine.
Okay.
I did want to say that, you know, if you're going to put up an ancestor shrine where you already have one, I was told from my practices that I might not want to put somebody who had issues, and I'll put my statement here, so I might not necessarily want to put my troubled alcoholic uncle on my shrine, or at least not pictures of him. If I wanted to remember him, that I could, you know, have a nice piece of paper that I wrote the names of ancestors on that maybe I don't want so close to me, that I want to, you know, honor them, but I don't want them so close to me. So I wanted to go back to that for a moment and kind of say that. And that would be my only 2 cents worth, really, as far as, like, restrictions, unless you have something specific that you practice where you have more rules.
I think that's really appropriate and really important, and I think that's where you get into that sort of ambiguous, the mighty dead, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to just ancestors. The mighty dead
mm-hmm.
sort of signed up by their association with their own spiritual practices for doing
mm-hmm.
spiritual work beyond this lifetime.
Right, and you know, with this one uncle of mine in particular, I loved him to death when I was a kid. I spent a whole lot of time with him and did a lot of stuff to him, and I really did love him. But, you know, when he got older, his alcoholism was really bad, and I had a hard time even being in the room with him when he came to visit. So when he died, I really had to force myself to remember what he was like when I was a kid. So I was able to think well of him when he passed. 'Cause, yeah, alcoholism is a horrible disease, and I'm sure some of you know that.
Yeah.
But as far as other questions, you two ladies had already kind of answered about, you know, bothering people or hating to call someone who prefers to be at rest. You know, I think that if a spirit kind of is off busy, they just won't come. But generally, I think that ancestors are pretty happy to be propitiated and be remembered. And it's more about building that relationship with them than it is about, like, hey, can you do this for me? Hey, can you do that for me?
Yes.
I agree. Yeah.
So I think that's important. You know, so some very basic things that you can do to honor your ancestors if you set up a little shrine or whatever, you know, a bare minimum basic polite thing that you would do when somebody even comes to your house is offer them something to drink. So you can put glasses of water on your shrine, you know, and only leave it for like a day or two, and then you want to change the water if you're going to have it there all the time. But, you know, as far as my practices, I've been told that they really like coffee. So you want to give them stuff that they liked in life. So, you know, if your grandma liked Jameson, perhaps you might want to leave a shot of Jameson at your shrine. Or I posted a couple links, and Lisa's posting some links, too, on books and things. But I really love Laura Patsouris's book, Weaving Memory. And if you look, I think I sent the Amazon link, but if you go to Lulu, you can buy an electronic copy of it for $5 if you really want it, and I think it's a great book. And then, of course, Lisa's book, I stuck up there, so Manifest Divinity by Lisa Spiral.
Yep.
And then Lisa was throwing some links in for Crystal Blanton and Ancestor Altars and The Mighty Dead. So what say you, ladies? I think that, you know, the ancestors really do like to be remembered and, you know, like it when you bring them little stuff, even if you light a little tea light. Because
yes,
I've had tea lights going since last night.
Yes. I've put tobacco, herbs, whiskey, chocolate-covered cherries, wine, drawings, just little quotes, just happy quotes. So I just try to remember what they like, or and those ancestors that I didn't meet on this side, that that they'll give me an indication of what they like, and then I'll put that there if I, like I said, if I didn't know them in this life. And it's enjoyable, or I'll make dolls, like poppet dolls, and sew on beads and just make the poppet dolls. And sometimes I'll just I'll make them with cloth, but other times I'll just use like that foam type of paper. It's not paper, but it's like a foamy type of paper. That's how I describe it. Well, I'll cut that out as a person's figure, and I'll decorate that too, based on the things that they're guiding me, that they're helping me with, and then once again that back and forth partnership, that equal partnership, that I'm also helping them also. So it's going back and forth, that communication sometimes, that when words or symbols just don't cut it, there's nothing that can replace a picture. And go, it's almost like playing chess with each other. And I've also done that too, that the chess pieces, that I will move the pieces where I'm led for what they would want to move or not. But the last 2 years has been mostly about the pictures and the poppets.
A lot of people are very specific about family pictures, is that there's the wall of the family who has passed and the area where the family living are, and they do not mix up. There's a lot of cultural stuff about moving somebody from the live family pictures over to the wall of the dead, or, you know, wherever that area is.
Well, I won't put a living person on the ancestor altar.
Right.
Yeah, that's important, I guess, to say that, you know, if you have a picture of, say, yourself and a descendant, you should cut yourself out. And I get a lot of people probably don't want to cut their actual pictures, so do make a copy of it and cut the copy.
Right.
But I do want to, I guess, kind of move forward and go to talking about ways to work with the ancestors specifically.
Okay.
So I guess I'll let you ladies talk about what ways you work with the ancestors.
Okay, I guess it's your turn, Lisa.
One of my favorite ways to work with the ancestors, you know, you were talking about making poppets or giving them the things that they like. And one of the things that I really like to do is one of my gardens is dedicated to my ancestors, my ancestor garden. And I choose plants for specific ancestors, and, you know, just being out there and tending the garden and weeding the garden and, you know, replanting the things that are annuals every year and stuff, that's a really nice way for me to just make that connection for them. I also find very much that, you know, when I am doing public ritual kinds of things or event kinds of things, where ancestors are specifically welcome. They show up in droves. And so acknowledging them, welcoming them, you know, for being more present than maybe they are in day-to-day life, those kinds of things I think are really important. I am a big one for honoring the spirits of the land. If I'm going to do a ritual outside, in, especially in some place where I don't live, and I tend to make an offering, and I tend to try to make an offering of something that is, like you say, that the ancestors in the area would like, something indigenous to the area. And cornmeal is actually my default on that, because I don't like sprinkling tobacco because it's a pesticide. Places where it might or might not be welcome, or salt, the same thing, or even alcohol. And cornmeal, I know, isn't going to hurt whatever I'm putting it on. So I tend to use that as my default to honor the ancestors of the land if I don't have something more specific for where I'm working when I'm traveling.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's cool. So how about you, Steph?
Well, they help. I don't even know which direction, once again, the ocean thing. They help me read individuals, and usually with motion, that if a person is, can use such very subtle motions of their body that the ancestors will nudge me a little bit and use my body to help make that other person feel more comfortable, more confident, more whatever that person needs for that particular moment. And it can be most of the time so subtle, but my only hope is when the person leaves me that they feel maybe a little better about themselves. Because as soon as I identify that someone has maybe a sadness there, maybe they've just lost a dog, or maybe they've lost or any kind of pet, or they've had a bad day, that I can be aware, be more conscious of what they're feeling, so that I can kick into that mode of helping a little. I don't go overboard. I don't say, okay, I'm feeling something from you. All right, now sit down and tell me. No, I don't approach things that way. I am more subtle than that on the most part. And so they help me be more engaged and becoming more aware of my surroundings. And then they also help me to identify when a situation arises, the things going on under the surface, underneath the situation, and my behavior, hopefully, is to help in that situation. And there's many times that the ancestors lead me to say, no, you walk away from that situation. And okay, then I walk away from that situation. And they help me become more still, and within, inside that stillness, seeing all that can be learned within that. And they were the first ones to make me aware of my astral body so that I could develop it and grow in that arena, this arena, and how they could I'll just leave it like that. So, but the bottom line, and I can go on and on and on, but the bottom line is that they're my friends, and it's not all special and lights and shiny things and sparkly things and sacred holy things. No, it's just, they're just my friends. I'm just me, and they're just them. We're just we're just in this together. So none of this, like, oh, then I saw 12 masters of the spirit. No, we're just friends.
So, Stephanie, you work with your ancestors kind of like you would work with a familiar or spirit guide? Is that
absolutely, yes. The spirit guide, yes.
I think that's lovely. And I think that's a really, really something that they're good at because they understand what it's like to be in this body.
Hmm. Yeah.
Agreed. I think, sorry, I'm having a squirrel moment. I'm trying to post all of the links from Joe into the priestess group. So they're all there. So I'm kind of multitasking. Another way to work with the ancestors is, of course, divination. To work with your ancestors as a guide during divination because, in my opinion, your ancestors have a vested interest in you succeeding in your endeavors. Because you are... you know, their continuance.
Very good. Very good.
I think that, you know, the ancestors, like I said, you know, they do want to be propitiated. You know, I think they're quite happy to be remembered and, you know, given little things. You know, and as I said earlier, you know, about maybe not going to them with, like, every little thing. Because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, your ancestors expect you to put on your big girl panties and live your life and not, you know, ask them every trivial little thing like, should I wear red today or should I wear blue? You know?
Oh, sure. I never use them that way. It's like I don't need them to tell me because I understand why if other people use it to, okay, that must be fun too, but I don't. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm dissuading anybody from doing that.
Exactly. Oh, no, I'm glad you are, because that is a good point to bring up. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it would never have occurred to me to even work with them that way, so I'm glad you thought.
I know.
Yeah, I would just dissuade anybody from, you know, over asking them stuff, you know. But, you know, I do think that ancestors in general have a vested interest in you succeeding, and they do want to help you. So, you know, do go to them for stuff. Do ask them for their help, but don't overdo it.
Right.
Well, and I think it goes both ways. I think any time that you approach any aspect of the divine, whether it's your ancestors or whether it's deity or whether it's that, you know, that heart of the divine that we all live in, that starting with gratitude is really helpful and really useful. And even, and sometimes especially if you've got a family relationship that's a little iffy, like your uncle with the alcoholism or something, if there were with the close ancestors, or even with the distant ancestors where the stories are still there and there's still stuff in the family that comes from way back, so far back, you don't even know where it started, but you know who's responsible. That going with an open heart and just gratitude for, I'm glad that I'm here, and I know I couldn't be if I wasn't part of this lineage, and I can be grateful for that just because it gave you my existence, and that I can be, you know, the slow opening of your heart to unconditional love. I know you were horrible in this life, and I can only wish you the best as you continue forward in whatever your spiritual path is. Can be really healing along the family line.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And since you're saying that, I do want to say that, you know, I had mentioned Laura Petsoris' book on weaving memory. She talks about, like, you know, what if you have, like, a lot of really bad people in your family? And I hope you don't. However, that can be the case. And she, there's a section in her book where she talks about, like, just amputating that rotten part of your family and going back farther to find people that you can work with in a good way.
And sometimes it takes a while. You know, I have my grandmother on my mother's side died when I was about 9 years old. And she was very important to us, and we always knew that she would be available to us as an ancestor, but she's never been particularly present. And I certainly have never invited her into a pagan ritual or those kinds of things because she was very, very careful about her Christianity. And I want to be respectful of that. And she has just in the last year started sort of showing up occasionally. And it's amazing to me that she would, but I think that she needed the time to do her work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much easier to skip over her and to go to my great-grandmother, who I never knew, and who had some serious issues in the family, but who my mother remembers her before she converted to Christianity. My mother remembers her doing things like making the table dance. So I know that there are connections that I can make across those lines further back, even though I don't know those women, that I had a harder time making with my grandmother who I knew.
Yeah, I gotcha. And that could happen, you know, just I understand that my maternal grandmother was, when I knew her, was kind of a bit of a stern woman. You know, so that definitely kind of, we didn't have that, like, chatty hangout sort of relationship. My grandmother did not play. So, yeah, I could see that, and I probably am less forthcoming to her than I am, again, to my great-grandmother, whom I never knew, but everybody seems to tell me that they see her around me. So I can definitely relate to that, and I'm sure some other people out there can also. So
and yet there's that side that, excuse me?
Oh, go on.
Oh, sorry. I don't know if it's I'm essentially an optimist in life, and
yes, you are.
Well,
even
okay.
During Mercury retrograde, I'm sorry, go on.
That what Lisa was saying resonates with me and you, that I would like to think that just because someone was awful here on this side, that everybody that enters on the other side remains that way. That I would hope that that's just not a hard and sound rule, that in fact they maybe just got lost over here. Maybe they were incredibly misunderstood. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the people that weren't nice, but maybe there may be times that when they cross over and then look back and go, oh, I get it. I just didn't realize that I was so lost, that I was so unkind to people. I now see when I go over and reborn again, I know what to work on. Like, in other words, that when they're on the other side, they wake up, even though it's nice if you wake up here, but maybe that they'll go, okay.
I get what you're
saying.
I get what you're saying, and to that I will say, in African diaspora, there are different things that are done to elevate the soul of one who has passed. So that there are specific rituals that you can do for a certain number of days to help elevate that soul.
Okay.
So, you know, I would almost say that, you know, in working with your ancestors, that it's definitely a two-way relationship.
Yes.
You know, you're propitiating them and working with them, but by doing so, you may also be helping them as well.
Yes.
So I have not done the ritual where you propitiate an ancestor to raise them up. It was for somebody else, so I can't exactly talk about that. But I have seen it.
Okay.
So, and I thought it was pretty nifty.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, like, the person was not a bad person, but there was something to be said for helping to elevate them.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of funeral rites are actually written with that sort of sense that you're taking them from this earthly plane and helping them raise up to a higher plane as part of a funeral rite.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at them and analyze them as rituals, that's really a lot of their intention.
Very nice.
Yeah, you know, and I think even with you bringing that up, that I don't know that that's necessarily in people's consciousness.
Oh, I don't think it is at all.
About participating in, you know, in funeral rites and, you know, a lot of people, I remember, you know, I got kind of pissed at one of my friends because he wouldn't come to a funeral service. And, you know, his answer was, you know, I'm really just not good at that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
You know, but I was real, and I guess I probably shouldn't say pissed. I wasn't pissed. I was annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't give him crap for it. I was like, yeah, okay. But it annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I definitely think there's something to, you know, those rituals and participating in them. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I get that, you know, Somebody recently passed away, a friend of my husband's, and they did everything all in one day. And I was like, oh, you know, that's really awesome, and a lot more people should do that because it is kind of can be inconvenient to have, like, a several-hour wake and, like, the following day have the graveside services, so then you're, like, missing 2 days of work.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, a one-day thing universally across the board might be better for everybody as far as participation. Although that might put some grave digging at night. I don't know how people would feel about that.
Yeah.
It wouldn't bother me because I'm a little weird and creepy anyway, but...
Well, and some of that is just because we live too quickly to really appreciate the transitions in our life. It's a major transition. And sometimes I miss things like, you know, wearing a black armband or something to let people know that you're grieving. Because, you know, it's like, well, wasn't that last week? It's a little rough. That's People do that. We are supposed to move through and move forward and move past. And there isn't enough time and enough honoring of that transition on either side. Not that you can't do it in a day and do it beautifully, because I think that's possible, but I also think that, you know, everybody needs their own time and space.
But
true,
you bring up
a good question in that, or subject, that when one of our loved ones passes, that people, I think, feel awkward because they want to say and do the right thing for the person that's just lost someone, and that they tend to not comfort or not bring up the person's name. And the person grieving wants you to bring up that person's name. They want to talk about it, but yet neither party is willing to start the conversation because both feel, well, I don't want to bring up the person that I just lost, and then the person saying, well, I don't want to bring up the person that person's lost because I don't want them to feel any worse than they already are.
Mm-hmm. I've picked up the bad habit from my aunt of talking about people like I just saw them last week, so I have no issue with that. I talk about everybody like they're still alive because, you know, I think as long as you're still talking about them and still telling stories about them, that they are still alive.
Yes. Very nice.
So, I don't know. My sister and I had this whole conversation about our mom the other day, so... I'm all for still talking about, you know, people who have passed on no matter what.
Right.
But we're quickly, we're actually at the hour.
Okay.
So I want to hit the rest of our stuff as quickly as we can because I do want to squeeze it all in. So daily practice, ladies, anything on daily practice, shrines. Daily practice and shrines, and then we'll go on to what the ancestors are good or not good for and kind of revisit that a little bit. So, Lisa.
Daily practice is like my all-time least favorite thing to do. I'm really bad at it. That's why I teach a workshop about it. you learn a lot about the things that you're not good at. You have to struggle with them, so you learn a lot. I find that meditative practice, taking time out and just spending some time acknowledging and focusing on them is really nice when I can make myself do it. I also find sometimes, you know, the whole prayer bead thing, setting up an ancestral prayer bead string, which is, I posted my prayer bead post on that I wrote on my blog. But prayer beads are really, really flexible. You can use them for anything. And I think, uh-huh. You know, having a memorial set is a really nice way to connect with your ancestors or even just to include an ancestor bead on whatever prayers that you're making to acknowledge their support and their presence in your life and in the work that you're doing. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. I really enjoy the beads, and working with beads shows up with me with making pendulums, and I devote every pendulum I make to one ancestor. So I have this one wall in one closet that is head to toe pendulums. So I always like to say that's because I love the ancestors so much, but I think the real truth is because I love beading. I'm sorry. So, and the excuse to bead, I really enjoy. But to daily practice with the ancestors, with the meditating, just always assuming that they're always with me. I'll pull a few tarot cards out, and sometimes it's one tarot card to get the day kicked off in that, okay, so in which direction are we going to be moving through today? What are we going to, what's our focus today? And of course, in the end, that's my decision. So it's that two-way street again. But I like pulling out the tarot. Of course, I absolutely adore the ritual of the I Ching. And even though I may not do the whole ritual of the counting of the yarrow, I will still use it in many different ways. But the whole point is that the communication, always the communication, because it's such a verbal divination, slash ritual, slash working with ancestors divination, that it just fits quite nicely with my sensibility. So I do work with the ancestors in the I Ching in a very, I guess, just natural way. I guess anything that you do on a regular basis, it just becomes second nature to you. And then, of course, the water, because that's what most of what I'm all about is water and how that interacts with me every day. And once again, I can't say one particular way the way I use water with the ancestors, but water is, once again, a very open-ended, fluid, communication with the ancestors. But to just bottom line it's just, well, like I said before, we're just
here
together.
I think the word that you're looking for is conduit. Water is an excellent conduit for a lot of things.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
If you can answer quickly, somebody in the chat room wants you to expand on how you use your pendulum to connect with the ancestors.
Okay, well, because I have many different types of stones, I personally ask the ancestor, all right, so which stone, which ancestor do you want me to work with today? And then I pick one, and then I go into meditation, and I ask them questions. And naturally, because it's a obvious, like it's a pendulum, it is, in fact, going to answer your questions. And, yes, in fact, I have a little course that is taught in witch school that I teach about that. It's just not about yes or no questions. That the pendulum answers many, many more questions than just yes or no, because the pendulum just doesn't go in two directions. It goes in at least like 12 directions. It's
right.
Movement. It's on and on. Yeah. So it's a really simple form of communication, because literally there you are. You're watching it and you're asking it a question, and you're allowing the ancestors to speak to you through that, and it's fun.
Cool. Thank you. Lisa, do you have anything else to throw in there?
I think that the other place that I run into ancestors is when I'm doing Reiki or some of the other healing modalities that I know. Anything that's got a lineage associated with it. You know, I have a lineage initiation in Wicca. So when I'm priestessing in that mode, when I'm connecting with that lineage, I'm connecting with those ancestors. Reiki has a lineage associated with it. So when I do that, I call on the support of that lineage. And I think lineage work is the other place. What do I want to say? Very consciously present for me.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So for me, I will say that as far as daily ancestor practice, that I think my ancestors are with me in everything that I do. I think they influence my art. You know, they're always with me. And so for that, I will say, as far as shrines go, I honor my ancestors regularly by making shrines for other people.
Yes.
Because I help them connect with their ancestors. So I threw a link up for Witch School store in the chat room where you can actually order a shrine for me, so I'll toot my own horn there.
Good.
So you can pick, you can customize your shrine. It's a little limited in there as far as what you can customize it with, but you can customize the shrine. And I also posted pictures of a shrine that I recently made as a housewarming gift for somebody. So for me, that's my way of connecting with my ancestors and slipping shrines into that conversation. I think shrines can take on so very many different expressions based on the person and how they see stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because Lisa was talking about gardening, Stephanie was talking about a closet. You know, so there's a lot of different ways to connect.
Yes.
You know, my big shrine does not fit where I live right now, but my big formal shrine is made out of windows. I have really big windows that I have hinged together that open and sit in a corner, because in the practice of African diaspora, like, we spit rum. So the idea of windows came to me because I could put all of my pictures on the other side of the glass. So when we spray the rum, I'm not ruining my pictures.
You are so smart.
So yeah, I don't know. My husband found these windows, and yeah, they got my artistic ancestors were riding me. So yeah, I think it really depends on the person, what your tastes are, and perhaps your ancestors will give you ideas of what they want on their shrines.
Yeah.
So finally, do we want to give any do's or don'ts for ancestor stuff?
Do listen.
Or possible do's or possible don'ts.
Yeah, do listen, because they will tell you, you know, they'll tell you when they're responsive, when they're liking something, you'll know, you know. And when they don't, they kind of disappear and fade away.
Agreed.
And pay attention to those kinds of cues, and just continuing to do the things that they like and enjoy, and enjoy them in your life.
Agreed.
Yes. Well, when you
That's
first
you?
Said what they're not good for, I was thinking, oh, that's a tough one. They're not good for making hot chocolate. They're not good for...
I don't know. You know, I think they, if you made them hot chocolate, they might swim in it.
Okay, all right.
That would be ancestor-flavored hot chocolate, but yeah,
okay.
I don't think you'd want to eat any. I don't think you'd want to eat or drink anything you left on your shrine for them.
Right.
Well, I think, Tracy, you talked about this before with the ancestors and the graveyard dirt. Is, you know, you ask the people who were doing the thing that you want done to do those things. You don't ask somebody to do something that's outside of their skill set.
Yes.
And I think that's very true with the ancestors, that you, you know, you don't ask for help with the things that you know that they weren't good at.
Mm-hmm. And I will jump in for this one too, because now that you're saying that, so since I was talking about my alcoholic uncle who was married lots and lots of times, mm-hmm. and did not have successful romantic relationships, I wouldn't ask him for help with something like that.
Oh. No.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I would ask, like, the aunt who was married once, 60 years.
Yes. Yes. And yet, at the same token, that person that was married a million times, they were still expressing themselves and experiencing the thing that they signed up for, even though none of us would understand that. And... So it's like every life is valuable, and I'm sure that person learned, let's hope he learned, I guess I could only say that, let's hope he learned something through working with and being with a million wives.
Go cheerleader, Stephanie. Perhaps someday I will take you to come meet my uncle, because he's down in your neck of the woods.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I have to say, as far as do's and don'ts, you know, I agree with Lisa as far as, you know, not necessarily asking for help comfort with something that's out of their skill set.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I think that's kind of something people don't necessarily think of when approaching ancestor work.
Right.
But my biggest, hugest don't for ancestor work is don't, and I really mean don't like give them a candle or something once and then ignore them for a year.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, and then come back and go, hey, I came to work with you again. That's maybe one of my biggest pet peeves in the pagan community is people really push ancestor stuff where it feels like people are only pushing it around someone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my biggest don't. They're your ancestors all freaking year.
Yes.
Every day, they're still your family.
Yes.
So maybe that makes me sound obnoxious or pushy, but, you know, my theory with ancestors is do it or don't do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let your word be your word.
You know, I mean, think of that friend you have, or maybe friend's not the best word to have, an acquaintance you have who only calls you when they're moving and they need help moving.
Right.
Or who only calls when they need something and, you know, doesn't put any effort towards you. You're going to get tired of them pretty quickly and not want to speak to them anymore, and I think the ancestors would probably respond in a similar way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my two cents worth. If you
no, I'm glad
you
brought
start
that up.
It, mm-hmm. If you start it, do it wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't want to be like a bitchy wagging my finger sort of human, but you know, do it or don't do it.
Yes.
You know, it's a relationship that you really need to build on, and the more you build on it, you know, like Lisa was saying, listen.
Yeah.
You know, if you make it a point to try to connect with them and listen, the more you do it, because Don Lewis is talking about psychism and it being like a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
The more you use it, the more strength you will have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think the more time you take to, you know, sit down in front of the shrine, like maybe first thing in the morning, and getting yourself a cup of coffee, get them a cup of coffee, too, and bring it to the shrine and go sit in front of them and have coffee with them and go, hey, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
So there's my absolute don't for it.
Oh, no, I'm glad you brought that up. That's absolutely a valuable piece of information.
So, again, maybe I kind of sound like a bitchy snot, but, you know, that's my two cents worth.
No.
But, you know, I have to say, I love my people and, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I have lots of them, so, and I like working with them and like knowing that they're around and influencing
yeah.
my, I've been doing a lot of ancestor arty-farty stuff the last week or so. They're out my mind and in my heart and moving my hands, so.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Feeling passionate about it. But I'll be passionate all year, just saying. So, ladies, we're 20 minutes into the next hour, so we should start winding down. What would you like to leave the audience with?
Lisa, you want to go?
I encourage you to, you know, give it a try. And I agree that it's something that you either do or that you don't do. But if daily practice is something that, like me, you're not good at, you know, pick something that's going to come up, like the garden, or you know, every time I make this particular pie, or what I'll give a piece to my ancestor who I got the recipe from, or you know, something that's going to trigger you to remember to check in. You know, you don't necessarily call your mom every day, but
mm-hmm.
you do check in on a fairly regular basis, if not once a year. And I think that mm-hmm. that's really setting triggers for yourself so that you do that is one of the easiest ways to work with your ancestors.
I guess my...
Thank you. Well said.
I guess. Very well said. I guess those of us here that absolutely love, well, that's a, with a capital L, love, to be with our ancestors every day. That's just how we're made. But those that hear this lesson, this conversation in the future, not everyone is made the same way. So if you're just not into the practice of being with ancestors on a daily basis, that's okay. That is perfectly fine, too, because we are so blessed to be part of this pagan nation, in a sense, this pagan community. There are many ways to connect to many things and
uh-huh.
through many conduits. So don't ever feel like, oh, well, gee, well, there must be something wrong with me. No, maybe you are, in fact, connecting, but maybe not through ancestors. Or maybe you are connecting to ancestors every minute of your life, and you haven't realized it yet. But everyone's going to show up in their own way and be completely in love with a certain aspect, or maybe many aspects, and just go and enjoy what you already are.
Well said.
Yes, thank you.
And that was kind of some of the point of the series was to, you know, talk about various different ways to connect with the divine.
Right.
Yep.
So this is only part two. We have more parts to come where we will be talking about ways besides ancestors. So... And Stephanie is right, you know, some people, it's just not their thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, like my friend who I was annoyed with because he, you know, wouldn't come to a funeral service because it wasn't his thing. I was annoyed.
Right.
I get it, though.
Yeah.
So it is different for everybody. So with that, I think I pretty much have said everything that I wanted to get out. So I will encourage everybody, although we will be back next week on Friday. But part three will be coming up for us next month, and we'll be talking about connecting to the divine. Part three, deities and pagan traditions. So we'll be talking about what makes a deity a deity, heroes of deities, time and age, how traditions work with deities, and being pulled by a deity outside of your tradition.
That's another big topic.
So, yeah, that sounds...
Yeah. So,
oh,
so that'll be the topic
okay.
for we three in a month. Yeah, so next week I will be back with AC Aldag and Windwalker.
Nice.
So I guess that's it. So, ladies, where can people find you when you're not here?
Well, I'm Stephanie Neal, and you can find me at saneal@earthlink.net, and that's NEAL.
And I have a Facebook page as Lisa Spiral, and I also have a blog at lisaspiral.wordpress.com.
Very good. Thank you much, ladies. So that is it for us tonight. I hope you have all had a blessed Samhain or a blessed Beltane, depending on where you are in the world. And We enjoyed spending our time with you this evening on this lovely All Saints Day. And we didn't really talk about Day of the Dead any, but c'est la vie. We did talk about ancestors, and it's all kind of related. So that is it for us tonight. What was that?
We just had too much.
We did. It is. It's such a big topic. But, yep, that's it for us tonight. So we're out of here, and blessed be, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Blessed be.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate showtimes. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. And let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.